It's getting warmer and drier, but there may be an untapped natural resource that can offer fresh water. Fog.
Fog is more than just one way your beach day can be ruined. Coastal fog has the potential to be a major contributor to future sustainable agricultural practices. Today, we discuss fog and its impact on crops in California.
This is Radio Bio.
Don't know much biology.
Hello and welcome to Radio Bio. I'm your host, Lily Pennington.
And I'm Jackie Shea. And today we're visited by Sarah Bogescus from San Francisco State University. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. So can we get started by you telling us like what you do? What do you study?
Yeah. So I am a new assistant professor in the Department of Geography and Environment at San Francisco State. For research, what I do is I'm a plant ecophysiologist, meaning that I take the pulse of plants and I want to gain an understanding of what controls species distribution. So how do plants respond to their environment and how does that influence where they live? And so that's kind of the theme of my research. I also study coastal fog. And so as a climate phenomenon, how does coastal fog influence plant function and distribution and other things?
So when you say pulse of a plant, you're kind of talking like as if heartbeat. Like our own heartbeat.
That's what I, you know, that's kind of how I think about it, is that we have plants breathe. So they breathe in CO2 and they exhale water. And in that process of photosynthesis, they fix that carbon dioxide into sugars that they use to metabolize, eat, so that they can grow.
When Dr. Bogescus takes the pulse of plants, she's measuring their breath. Photosynthesis is when plants breathe in, and respiration is when they breathe out. When plants photosynthesize, they take carbon dioxide, CO2, from the environment to produce sugars and oxygen, O2. When plants respire, they take sugars and oxygen produced during photosynthesis to make energy for plant growth. In many ways, respiration is the opposite of photosynthesis.
Plants use pores in their leaves called stomata to breathe. If the environment is too dry, the stomata close up to conserve water, and the plant cannot get what it needs to make energy. Stomata are also used in a third process called transpiration, which is similar to sweating or letting off heat, where plants release water from these pores. Fog helps plants make energy more efficiently because it keeps the environment around the plant wet and allows the stomata to stay open longer to get oxygen and carbon dioxide from the atmosphere to keep all these processes going.
So in summary, photosynthesis is how plants inhale, respiration is how plants exhale, and transpiration is how plants release heat in the form of water, and fog plays a role in all three. When Dr. Bogescus takes the pulse of plants, she measures these processes to get a sense of their productivity.
That's really cool. You've got your finger on the pulse
of plants. Finger on the pulse of plants. Yep.
So you study how coastal fog affects plants. The plants that are like growing in these environments are kind of just at the mercy of these totally like abiotic factors. Mm-hmm. And so And we were talking about how stomata, they close up if it's too dry, but fog makes it wet.
Yeah, cool and wet. So it's more favorable conditions for plants to open their stomates and breathe in what would otherwise be really warm, dry conditions. So plants that have evolved in coastal environments that are foggy are less tolerant of experiencing drought stress than, let's say, trees that are growing here in Merced. They're not kind of physiologically as robust as more inland plants.
They've been spoiled by the fog.
And that's not exclusive. That's not all plants.
Yeah.
But there are certain species that are more sensitive to drought stress.
Okay, and so we're talking about fog on the coast of California.
Mm-hmm.
And we know the California coast has a lot of agricultural fields
mm-hmm.
full of plants that didn't necessarily evolve or, like, come from California,
mm-hmm.
the coast of California.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does, like, this coastal fog affect these plants that aren't used to it?
So the, like, overall, the coast buffers extreme temperature conditions. So it's never going to get too hot. It's never going to get too cold. And even though the plants that grow really well along the coastline haven't necessarily evolved under those conditions, those are the conditions that meet the requirements of the plants.
Mm-hmm.
So the plants that grow especially well at the along the coast are strawberries, lettuce, Brussels sprouts, and artichokes.
Hmm. Millions of strawberries.
Yeah. Everyone loves strawberries. Everyone loves strawberries. Taking the pulse of strawberries, how do they do during foggy and non-foggy conditions? With the mindset of, like, we've learned a lot about fog and how it affects trees, such as redwoods, but we really don't know too much about how fog affects crops. Yet inherently, we know that this phenomenon is important in supporting the environment in which some of the most economically important crops grow. So what gives? What's going on here? And by studying the strawberries during foggy and non-foggy periods, so collecting measurements at the leaf scale, the canopy scale, and the whole field scale, we've learned that strawberry crops are, in fact, more efficient with their water use during fog events. So even though they're not photosynthesizing as much, they're not losing as much water. And so this is important because farmers are challenged, especially with climate change, to revise the way in which they're irrigating crops.
Mm-hmm.
We just came out of the most historic drought period, which affected farmers statewide and severely. And so and coastal farms were not excused from that. And even though we're having a particularly wet year this year, who knows what's going to happen next year? This could be a little blip in time, and we could be entering another 10-year drought or something.
Mm-hmm.
So the level of uncertainty with climate change, with respect to precipitation, and with certainty in temperature rise, we as a society, and farmers in particular, who use 80% of their freshwater resources, really need to modify practices.
Mm.
And no doubt that this is a tremendous challenge and shouldn't be on the shoulders of farmers to make that decision, all of these decisions. It takes a combination of science and policy, and farmers need support in, like, transitioning into what they have been doing into maybe a new system.
Yeah.
It seems like it would be a really important part of science to take it from the results to some sort of
mm-hmm.
actual change, because, you know, we could do all this work and learn all of these things, but
mm-hmm.
if we don't actually do something about it, then, you know, what's really the point? What's that like to kind
mm-hmm.
of to have to do that, to try to have to talk to people
mm-hmm.
who aren't scientists about what you do and why it's important to make these types of changes or develop
mm-hmm.
new technologies or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, it sounds
mm-hmm.
like you need to talk to marketers and and land managers
yeah.
and farmers and, you know, I mean, what kind of role does that play in your life as a scientist,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
what is that like?
Mm-hmm. Good question. I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
So it's a two-way street.
Uh-huh.
Scientists can produce results that inform management decisions, but it's up to the managers to use that information to make those decisions.
Mm.
And I can't say that what I found changed their practices.
Mm. That must be frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, but I also acknowledge that it's and farming is probably the most difficult job on the face of the planet.
With the worst consequences.
And really, you know, to change the irrigation knob has serious financial implications. Mm-hmm. If you turn that down and the crops don't grow, well, you're affecting a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so having worked in the field and working with the irrigation manager, the person who turns the knob, I got to see how it was done. Mm. And there's huge gaps right now between the science that's, you know, for instance, finding that coastal fog reduces plant transpiration, you know, the research world and practice. And the mediator between them is really ag technology. And so I think, if anything, the results that I find, you know, have found could inform, you know, a new ag tech company to install more sensors at the coast, account for the fact that fog's coming in, and, you know, it, can you sense it in a way that's informative of how much farmers should irrigate? So that's what I think is the more kind of realistic path, rather than me to a farmer directly. It's through kind of ag technology development and making them aware that fog is a phenomenon that matters.
It's really cool.
Yeah, ag technology to harness the power of fog.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
The tagline, but
I'm immediately in some sort of futuristic utopia where there's like fog nets
captured,
and then there's like these funnels going down into like ag.
Water, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that does happen.
Oh,
the future is now.
The future is now in like coastal Chile.
Oh.
So there's a company, an organization rather, called Fog Quest that set these huge nets along the coast that harvest fog, and that water is then gravity fed to rural farming communities in like the Atacama Desert, the driest place on earth.
Wow. That's really cool.
So fog is so important to like farmers everywhere.
Well, along the where it's
along
foggy.
The coast. Where it's foggy.
And so is California going to get on board with harvesting fog to supplement groundwater? Is it a realistic thing to do to make fog harvesting industrial scale and you know, hydrate people or crops? I mean, there's a lot that would have to go into it. You'd have to know what's in the fog, the chemistry of the fog.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to filter out of the fog to make it safe for irrigation water? Where are you going to collect the fog? How are you going to distribute it? You know, what scale can this happen? But I think it's worth imagining.
Yeah. Sounds like we need to develop some sort of like A-team research and development, Fog Met California. Fog Quest 2.0,
right.
Cali.
Yeah. So there is a fog net, too, in California, but it's in a can of worms.
We know so
can
little.
Of
so
worms.
Can of worms.
Who knew?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Who knew?
But is fog being affected by climate change? Are we seeing like less or more?
Yeah. So what I can say definitively about that is the degree of uncertainty. What I can say for sure is that there's a high degree of uncertainty around how fog is going to change in the future. With that said, a paper published in 2010 found that fog has not only declined in frequency along the California coast over the past 30 years, but will likely continue to decline if ocean temperatures increase, mm-hmm. right? So remember I talked about right. the three ingredients, the recipe mm-hmm. for fog. So with changes in sea surface temperature or ocean temperature, that is one way in which fog might not be as kind of intense in the future. There's also the gradient of coastal and inland temperatures. If that gradient isn't as strong, if the coast starts to warm up more, that gradient, the fog's not going to be pulled in as much. The other factor that affects fog is actually urbanization. So a paper by Park Williams in 2015, I think it was, showed that increased urbanization decreases fog. So when you have a city, you're developing, you're putting a surface down that heats up a lot during the day.
And can't absorb the fog drip either. Right. So it's not, it can't even use the resource that's available.
Right. There's no fog drip in a city unless you're painting buildings with fog collection paint, which is also a technology that's been developed. But so with increased urbanization, there's a decrease in the duration of a fog event and the extent of the fog event. So certainly as California, coastal California grows and grows and grows and grows and grows, who knows if we're at our carrying capacity. I feel like we're at the carrying capacity, but it's going to keep growing and expanding. How does the interaction between the land surface change and how does changes in land use impact fog? Likely to be another source of its decrease. So without, so what do we do if we imagine a world without fog? Like its importance is like, oh, it's over there. Like if you live in Merced and you're like, oh yeah, coastal fog, it's over there. It might not matter right away that it exists or not unless you are, you know, suffering from heat in inland and want to go and experience the foggy coastline. But I guess fog is easy to take for granted unless you imagine a world without it. And then you start thinking about like, oh, well, California can't support strawberries or lettuce, and it has huge economic consequences, actually. And San Francisco is going to start heating up a whole bunch. And, you know, what's the city going to do without fog? It might ruin some people's beach day, but at the same time, it offsets heat stress. And so San Francisco doesn't have the same what's called urban heat island effect as more inland cities do. So
I'm definitely going to look at a box of strawberries a little bit differently from here on out, basically. They'll never look the same again.
I know. They don't look the same to me.
What got you excited about fog in the first place?
Yeah. So I'm actually from the East Coast. I'm from Philadelphia in the city. And when I went to college out in Oregon, I was blown away by kind of what I saw as the Wild West, right? And a part of being kind of amazed by the vastness of the West Coast was also seeing the cool climate. And my interest in fog came from personal observations. And so just following my curiosity about like, oh my gosh, what is this thing? Why am I enveloped? Why can't I see like 5 feet in front of me all of a sudden? What is this? And so I think just keeping, maybe a bit cheesy, but really keeping your eyes wide open and not dismissing curiosity is really the way forward. And I think is important for inspiring ingenuity that we so desperately need in a rapidly changing world.
So keep your eyes open because you never know if all of your purpose and path is literally enveloping you.
Ding, ding.
That's really cute. Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us today. We had such a great conversation. I feel like we learned a lot about what's going on in the world with fog and plants and how they respond. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for your great questions. It was really fun. Thanks.
This episode of Radio Bio was brought to you by Lily Pennington and Jackie Shea and was produced by Sonia Vargas and edited by Lily Pennington. The artwork was created by Jackie Shea.
Radio Bio is produced by graduate students at the University of California, Merced. Support for Radio Bio comes from the Quantitative and Systems Biology Graduate Group, the School of Natural Sciences, and the Graduate Division at UC Merced. You can help support Radio Bio's mission of increasing scientific literacy in California's Central Valley and beyond by donating at giving.ucmerced.edu/radiobio. Find out more about our mission, events, and podcasts at www.radiobio.net.